You're listening to Southside Broadcasting, and it's time for another award-winning edition of On Your Bike with the one and only Tony McDonough!
Yay! Yes, he's back with us in full force after a telephonic link a few weeks ago. We can relaunch, as we said, in full force, the Manila Team Manila, or indeed Team Manila Cycling Award, whatever we call it, it's still magic. It's Tony McDonough. How are you, Tony?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. Are you?
It's a very good indeed. Very excited that On Your Bike, the podcast, is back.
We're back.
Yay!
It's Manila in all its glory is back on the road as well.
Right. What a fantastic guest we've got today. What, I mean, you know, Commonwealth Gold, Tour de France man. Kellogg's
yes.
Milk Race. He's just, I mean, and, you know, outstanding, really.
It's
just
I think often in jest we sort of say when we introduce guests, the legend that is, but
This one is a genuine living legend.
Yes.
Phenomenal in every sense of the word. We are, of course, referring to Malcolm the Man Elliott. I say Malcolm the Man because obviously there's no sort of routine from that point of view. managerial teams connect. I mean, he's a Milk Race, Kellogg's Tour of Britain, national champion, competitor for England, Commonwealth Games in Brisbane, individual road race. I mean, just generally, literally an outsider. Known as a sprinter.
Yes, I would say if... if he was having his day today, rather than mid-80s, 90s, he would be Mark Cavendish.
He
would be that equivalent, yes.
We can put that question to him, actually,
yes,
as the programme proceeds. As well as the legend that is Mark Elliott, we want to have an update. What's happening with Team Manila?
We're back, thankfully.
exactly.
We had an unbelievable debut season that we covered.
Sure.
In detail here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
check out the podcast. They're still up there on your bike.
Yeah, I'll listen again, yes.
Yeah.
So, as Rise to Stardom.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of took on a big sponsor, and the fact is it didn't work out. And
it happens.
Sadly, yes.
They're lost at the end of the day.
It is, actually. So we're back to being Manila Cycling. We have a photo shoot this Sunday. And we're back on the road, and people will see us back on the road, full regalia, full kit, team car, all singing, all dancing.
And of course, the great thing is you can also have in massive loudspeakers across the base this.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit ManilaPR.com now.
You almost think that show had been planned, don't you, Tony? You know, it's spooky, really.
Yes, you know, yes, that's really. You're a talented broadcaster.
It's just all about the rhythm, as somebody once said. So let's talk us through. Are you still looking for possible cyclists? Because, I mean, I've been spreading the word, and as you know, we've got our very own writer, Jenny Finch, here, who is a passionate touch. She actually was more of a motorbike, but she likes cycling as well. She's a keen rugby soul. She's chronologically gifted, shall we say, but, I mean, she'd be up for it. We've got some of the other youngsters who are sort of quite keen. I'm even trying to persuade Rob, who's running not one but two Great North runs, that he might sort of be up for joining the whole thing. Are you still sort of possibly looking at new recruits as a case of...
We're certainly, yeah, for the race team, no, we're more than happy with those numbers.
Sure. Yep.
We'll keep his eyes open next year and see any particular talent that may be locally.
Absolutely.
But we're also running a sportive team, so people like cyclists like Rob could join that.
I don't think Rob actually is a cyclist. The point would be we'll actually take him through, because part of On Your Bike is really for folk such, well, it's also such as myself, but that could lead me into all sorts of things, but who've very rarely cycled or not cycled for a long, long time, and just thinking actually part of the fun of cycling, part of the fitness factor, that might be something that might be worthwhile, so they can kind of have the experience of a bit of coaching from the best, really.
Yes, certainly the sportive team would cater for somebody who just wants to get into the enjoyment of cycling. The next level up from that is the racing, which is different again.
Absolutely.
But certainly, if anybody's interested in joining the sportive side, then get in touch, definitely.
And presumably, your Facebook site remains?
Yeah, just Manila Cycling on Facebook and on Twitter. You'll find
Instagram?
No, we're not on there yet. Maybe one for next season, thinking about it.
All the social media.
We're on Periscope on Twitter next
season. It's just one thing after you've been Snapchat before too long.
Yeah.
What's happening? Although I'm still kind of working my head around the notion. I mean, some of my students have tried to explain the notion of, yes, well, of course you want something which instantly disappears after a few seconds. Not life.
Still working my head around PayPal, never mind Snapchat.
Precisely. okay, how are the races and the packages going? Are you still actually up next door to the James Cook University Hospital? Do you still actually use the cycling area?
Yes,
there?
We actually have an exclusive sort of team training session on a Wednesday night, right, through winter. But yeah, we will be racing then, and the velodrome's been added now.
I was going to say, I mean, since then, it's looking pretty good actually.
It's,
there were
it's
a lot of skeptics.
Facility, the sports village. Yes, we're quite lucky to have that on our doorstep.
Yeah. And I know people mourn, myself included, the loss of Clareville. But we were promised a new facility, and indeed the sports village has manifested as such.
When we're down there on a Wednesday, it's not just the cycling with the football and athletics; it's just a hive of activity, and it's good to see. A new facility being so busy, definitely.
Precisely. Okay, I know people are saying, yeah, it's all very well, bring on Malcolm, etc. Well, I'm going to have to wait a little bit more, because one of the great things about On Your Bike is, partly due to your own expertise, Tony, we get a balance between cycling, fitness, and music.
Because, of course,
you have that connection as well with respect to the whole thing. So I'm going to forward the next little item to your good self to introduce literally something which you have to be very careful of, particularly if cyclists are working through that as you cross the road, or possibly across my
street.
See what I did there? Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, well, go for it. Who's going to be singing this for us, and what's his background?
Well, we're lucky enough, because some of the labels that back us really some superb music. This track is one of them. And this actual band of one of our sponsors for next season. They're a South London band called Billy Vincent's. I've got a fantastic new album out, and this is the single from it, and it's called Across My Street.
if I ever fall off the track. So you could have picked that automatically for people who might not have the expertise of cycling that our next guest actually has. We've been teasing ahead to this for the programme as it's been sort of building up, etc. We're almost in a frenzy, a paroxysm of sheer excitement and joy, literally quite beside ourselves, because we can say those magical words: ace cyclist, gold medal winner, general all-round wonderful soul, Malcolm Elliott. Are you in fact there?
Good evening, yes. Hi there.
Yay!
Calm down.
As you can tell, Middlesbrough is greeting you with true joy across the airwaves, even though you're based in Sheffield. But that's okay. You know, it's all good. Malcolm, it's a genuine pleasure to connect with your good self in all sorts of ways. Tony has got a couple of questions. We're going to sort of share the interviewing between both of us in all sorts of ways. We've already alluded to some of the classic things. In fact, actually, I will just allude to this. Tony suggested that were you actually cycling competitively today, you would be more of the Mark Cavendish in terms of format and style. Would you say that's a fair comment?
Perhaps not someone, not so Cavendish, no. I see myself a bit more as a Sagan sort of a rider, perhaps, than Cavendish. I mean, pure outright sprinter like Cavendish, I don't think I really fitted that description. More of an all-rounder, more somebody who was very good at getting second place, as like Peter Sagan, he's a guy who can do a bit more versatile.
But of course, don't forget those Commonwealth golds. I couldn't, you know, so you know, it's amazing. I'd be sort of like, hey, I got a Commonwealth gold. It's fantastic. Tony, first question for you. I think it refers to the music.
It does, Malcolm. Yeah, I think you had a bit of the end of the Billy Vincent track there, which is because of the team itself is backed by record labels and various music industry connections. I just wondered, if is there any music you're into in particular?
Hi there, Tony.
Hello.
I'm thinking, whenever anybody asks me this question, it's sort of such a difficult one to pinpoint, because I've got a very, very wide variety of different tastes. I don't like any one particular kind, because I think if I did, you'd just kind of get fed up with that. So variety seems to be the spice there. I think a lot of it tends to be sort of perhaps 70s, 80s stuff, but not so much of the modern stuff. But then I do try and pick up some of the new stuff, and it's still nice to hear something original once in a while. You know,
is it, you had to be Human League, surely, being a Sheffielder.
Yeah, Human League, Def Leppard. I've got a few connections to those, both those bands. Mm. But they were. They were around and the very big one during the 80s when I was my most immersed in cycling, so I didn't tend to be that involved with them. I was rather tied up with what I was with myself.
I thought you might have had a bit of Def Leppard as motivational music, maybe.
Well, I think, although they'd kind of gone very US-based in the 80s there, and it's only, I've actually got a local connection with Rick Allen. His mother lives next door but one to me, so there you go. That's perhaps piqued my interest more recently.
That must be a bit like being in a celebrity street on that sort of basis. My next door neighbour at one is Def Leppard and Pete Allen. Wonderful.
The TV show, there, sure.
Exactly. Consistently, one of the things that Tony always challenges and shouts about is his allegiance to Sheffield Wednesday, as opposed to that other club in Sheffield.
Unfortunately, there's only one.
Well, there are people who would say the Blades are another issue entirely, but I suppose with the steel industry debacle that we're having recently, we best not go there either.
Yes,
anyway, but the key sort of question is, we were wondering, really, from your own point of view, Malcolm, are you a Sheffield Wednesday? Are you an Owl person, or you go elsewhere?
I didn't get too wrapped up in all of that. I was just thinking that I can probably count, maybe not on one hand, but two hands, the number of times I've seen both Sheffield teams play in my life. Around 10 or so times that I've been. I grew up quite close, and I used to work right around the corner from Hillsborough. So I should perhaps have a little more allegiance to Sheffield Wednesday, but.
Tony's just punching the sky with joy now, basically. Yeah. It's just too much.
Did you find that, Malcolm, is sort of in your teenage years, growing up and not being into the traditional sports, if you like? Were you made to feel a sort of odd man out being into cycling? Or people could see your talent.
But whilst I was at school, maybe, but once you left school, your life then sort of seems to be just purely involved in cycling and with cyclists. Mm. You tend to be in your own little circle there, and it's not. It's perhaps a little insular, but not so. You don't really feel like you're. It's just when you go out, I suppose, and with more regular people, and they're all talking about the nuances of football, and you kind of it's going way over your head, you sort of thing, you know.
So it's a bit being a sort of at the forefront of the sort of Sheffield sports scene in the late 70s and going towards the Moscow Olympics. I'm guessing you were you and did you cross paths with Seb Coe or?
Yes, there was a Seb Coe trophy, an award, which is still running to this day, and I was the very first recipient of that back in about 1980 when I was a junior there. I think it was for the Junior Worlds performances that we did there, but I got that. So my name was the first one of the. First name on the trophy for his award.
We are actually starting the campaign to have it as a Lord Malcolm Elliott before too long, so I think if it's good enough for Seb Coe.
Can we get petition started?
I think so. I think Lord Malcolm fits in quite nicely. Yes. Exactly. So there's a balance on that basis. Clearly, not one but two goals in the Commonwealth game scenario. Was that? Yeah, it's a cliche, but was it life-changing from your own perspective when you sort of, you know, actually achieved those gold medal standards?
Not immediately so. I mean, it was something that was a huge thing back at the time and remains so to this day. But time quickly moves on in cycling, and you go on to you're into the next season, and you've got new challenges and so on, and then you move in through the ranks. Turn professional a year or so after the Commonwealth Games, so you can't spend time looking back on what you've just done because you're caught up in the present and the immediate future.
And that's actually perfect visualisation for any athlete or any sort of life coach, really, that you know, it's all nice to actually sort of look longingly at the back, the past, and look at the nostalgia, but really the most successful folk, like yourself, Malcolm, they kind of, you know, they're already thinking about the next one.
Yeah, I suppose in a sense, though, you do sort of fail to appreciate at the time what you've done. It's only sort of decades later that you can look back and with some pride at that. But as I say, at the time, it was another win and another great win. But you've moved on already. You're on to the next thing.
Halfords. Yes. Shall we talk Halfords?
Yeah.
Because obviously that's an
ANC.
I've said it three times now, so that should be sort of a 30% one. But ANC Halfords in 1986 we have here. Another life-changing scenario, or was it just a case of natural progression as you move into professionalism?
As we look back in, you know, over time, yes, you could say it was certainly a big change of direction that had implications for a long, long time. I mean, having spent 2 years with Valley Wyman there when I first turned professional in 1986, I moved to ANC Halfords, and they'd had a long term plan to get more European racing, and then as that started to gain momentum, we started having these dreams, or certainly that the management started having these dreams about trying to get us into the Tour de France, but that did just seem like such a far off distant dream and notion that it was actually a real surprise when 4 weeks before the 1987 Tour we got the nod to say we were in, and it all really came about much, much quicker than we'd anticipated. But we just had to get ourselves ready in a short space of time and go and face it.
I mean, doing the Tour de France, I mean, well, one looks at it now, and I'm speaking pretty much as a hardly a bear cyclist in any way, shape or form, but it just seems like a phenomenal, impossible task. I mean, when you cover that kind of territory and all the rest of its meters, when you're actually taking part in that, and that was obviously long before the Tour de Yorkshire started and the sort of British aspects of the race took over, not that they're easy by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, psychologically, is it just a case of pushing yourself through the pain barrier to get through some of those hills?
It's about a lot of things, really. I mean, it's not just about enduring pain, although just suffering is a large part of what cycle racing is about. It's about withstanding discomfort longer than anyone else, I suppose. If you can do it longer than anyone else, you tend to be pretty good at it. Obviously, I've really oversimplified it there, but...
And we don't want to suggest that all cyclists are masochists, otherwise it's a different show that we're going on here on your bike, you know, a different perspective, but yeah.
But certainly, I mean, it's very, very demanding, and it's very easy to just back off on those pedals and think, well, you know, I don't want to do this, but that's not the way to win. Yeah. So you have to kind of just tough it out, and obviously there's a lot of training and natural talent and luck and everything else that comes into it, but certainly in essence, it's about being able to suffer.
So, did you find then in that 87 tour? I would say that's, I think, where we are today. That were the sort of foundations of Channel 4 showing the tour each night on TV in the mid 80s, and then we are where we are today. Did you feel like you were part of something going not so much mainstream back in the 80s, but you're part of something special that you're more noticed back home?
I think there was a general feeling back then in the sort of mid-80s onwards there, because we'd had the Kellogg City Centre series. There was this general feeling that cycling was finally going somewhere, and it was coming out of the shadows of being a complete minority sport, and that we didn't know, you know, it could have gone really, really mainstream back then. So yeah, I think there was that feeling. Although by sort of 1988, ANC had disappeared, and there didn't seem to be any following momentum from anywhere else. And you got to sort of early 90s, 1990, 91, and there was a recession kicked in, and everything seemed to contract from there on for a good number of years. So it was kind of a bit of a false dawn. Not like we're seeing nowadays in the last 5-10 years.
But they built on your giant shoulders. That's the important thing, Malcolm. Shoulders of giants. Yes. Exactly.
Well, yes, perhaps we can take a little bit of credit for that somewhere.
Roach, Yates and Miller sounds like a law firm initially, but I gather that, Tony, you certainly would hold them up as being sort of idols from the point of view, and it's a question you have in terms of how it was like working alongside those three folk.
Yes, I mean, as a watching cyclist, from my point of view, Stephen Roach was the star attraction, and Robert Miller was one of my sort of personal heroes on the cycling world. So I just wondered what it was like being close up to those sort of guys in a race environment, in a day-to-day environment.
Well, each were quite individual. I mean, Yates was very much. I spent quite a bit of time actually rooming with Sean, and he always seemed to be quite critical of the management and the way things were run in that team. It didn't seem a particularly happy time for him. And Miller too. You saw these guys sort of close up under pressure, and there in that team, in the Spanish structure of that team, it was it left quite a bit to be desired in a lot of ways. So they weren't backward in criticising how things were. Obviously, it was my first year there, so I was a bit more quiet and just to kind of listen to what was being said, but yeah, they were both very, very vocal. Stephen, I probably didn't really spend much time with Stephen because his whole season there of that the year that I was with Fagor was right up until August time when we rode the Tour of Britain. That was essentially, I think, it was my first race with him because he'd been injured the whole season. He didn't ride the Tour that year. He'd had various problems with his knee. And it was only there in August that we came to the Tour of Britain, the one which they all supported me when I won it. That was the first and real time that I'd had spent with Stephen.
So was that a big disappointment that didn't work out with Fagor? Or
I didn't actually consider that a disappointment. I mean, I could have continued with Fagor. The option was there, but I did get a more tempting offer from Tekker for the following year. That I think the team, the management of Fagor, were a little slow in realizing that the demand was there. So I just that was the reason for me moving on. There wasn't a sense of disappointment there when I left there, rather than moving on to something bigger and better.
Mm-hmm. So when you moved to Tekken and you won the Vuelta stage, what was the feeling like on to win a Grand Tour stage? Can you remember what was it, sort of like all your dreams coming together? And
do you know what? No, when I look at these things now and you see a rider win a Grand Tour stage now, it seems a much bigger deal than it did to me back then. Because I was you were riding other stage races and winning stages in other stage races, and then you went to the Tour of Spain, and you won a stage there, and it was the same, but just a bit bigger as what you'd already been doing, and hopes to continue to do. I mean, I do think that the scale of things, you lose that sense of scale when you're so close. In so closely involved as you were there, that you don't realise or appreciate at the time what you have done.
We have a number of listeners, Malcolm, over in the United States. Many of them actually in Los Angeles. We have a few name checks. So we've got Ace Director Phil Leonis and also Ilana Rain, Lily Holliman, and so on. I know they're always on about cycling and perspective. But what is the difference? I mean, are things better equipped over in the States? Did you get a sort of sense of, oh, it's a much bigger country? That's fairly obvious. Or indeed, were there sort of moments where you sort of thought, actually, we do it better over here in the UK?
I'm sorry, are you asking me...
The difference between cycling in the United States and in the United Kingdom.
Oh, when the United Kingdom... Back then, it was very, very much different. I mean, things have moved on hugely in the UK now. I think there was never any kind of comparison at all. Back when I went over to the States, it was never kind of considered an option for me to race in the UK. Then it was a choice between staying on a European team or going and moving, making the move to the States and joining an American team, and there were certainly differences. Chiefly, I think it was a lot more fun. They were able to. It was entertaining, and it seemed less pressure. The racing there seemed more suited to me, I did feel much more at home there, and I was much happier there. I think over the 5 years or so I'd been racing in Europe prior to that, the pressure was quite heavy on your shoulders, and I think the Spaniards were pretty good at exerting more pressure on you. Even if things weren't going well, they seemed to be able to exert more pressure on you, and it just created sort of unhappiness and discontent amongst the riders. So I think having made that move to the States, It was like a breath of fresh air, and it gave me a lot of impetus to continue on. Whereas before, I think I was lacking a bit of motivation and direction in my career. Perhaps even to the point where I might have retired there. But that did give me a new lease of life.
Do you find over the culture is very different depending on if you're racing for, say, an Italian team, a Spanish, a French, a US team? Is the behaviour behind the scenes very different?
Not so much. No, not so much. I mean, they've got different ways of going about. So they're all after the same, end result. I think some of the Northern European teams, although I don't speak from direct experience, some of the Northern European teams were more businesslike in their approach, perhaps a bit more strict, and maybe would have been. Perhaps more what I needed. The because the Spaniards and the French back then were so steeped in tradition and old ideas there, it was pretty hard to change them from that.
So like in all sports, then like you get the dodgy football manager. Is it which are the best and worst of the bosses you work for?
As I said, I think some of the Spaniards were from another century in terms of their approach, and it was quite funny. But I guess my last year in the States, which I'd had four happy years in with Chevrolet in the States, and then the last year that I was in the States was in '97 when I was at a team called Comptel, which folded mid-season, in fact. But that season, that team was just pretty much a bit of a debacle from right from the start. So I suppose that was probably one of the worst experiences I had, and I suppose contributed to some large extent to me stopping there when the team did fold, as in they ran out of cash and had no more money coming in. I think my motivation to find another team was probably waning a bit by then, just because of the experience I'd had with that team already. I was just a bit disillusioned by everything, and so that didn't help matters.
And clearly Manila Cycling hadn't actually set itself up then, otherwise you could have taken Mark on board.
Yes, we've tried. We tried last year.
Yeah. still a twinkle in the father's eye back then, wasn't it?
So talking of sort of dodgy teams, who was the nightmare to room with on
You don't
on,
have
on,
to
on
name names
tour.
Here, Malcolm, by the way. It's okay, we can just have descriptions. You don't even need to mention that, really.
Yeah, no, to be honest, no, I've not had anyone that stands out, really. I suppose I've heard of people being nightmares, but amongst team, you know, my team and perhaps other teams, but never had to suffer that one. I think I've probably been pretty good at choosing my roommates so far. But
flatulence that probably were the worst thing I would have thought, really.
I think that's probably a common theme throughout a lot of cyclists, one.
Yeah, exactly. Mind your motivation to get in front, I suppose. In terms of the Tour de France, Tour de Yorkshire and so on, I mean, if people had actually said in the 1980s, 1990s, yes, it's going to have a stage in Yorkshire, you would have said, it's insane. Well, from your own perspective, was it a thrill to actually see the whole stage going through Yorkshire and, of course, your hometown of Sheffield?
Yeah, just surreal. I will never see scenes like that again in my life. I mean, I just consider myself super fortunate to have actually been able to witness some of the things I did see there. And as you say, I mean, back when I was growing up and training on those very roads, the tour came along over all those years later. It was just so far-fetched to even consider that could be a reality. So, but it just shows how far the sport's come in these last 5 or 10 years now.
Absolutely, and of course it's home city of Sheffield, not hometown. It's just obviously from the town of Middlesbrough. It's clearly sort of you should work on that basis. Yeah. So, Tony, you got a fascinating question with respect to time travel here, if it were available. So, go for it.
I just wanted, if you was a sort of 16-year-old budding cyclist, the 16-year-old budding Malcolm Elliott setting out now, what would the veteran Malcolm Elliott, if you don't mind me calling you that, what advice?
I prefer chronologically gifted, I think, actually, as opposed to veteran. Yes, you know, yes. Experientially enhanced. You know.
Yeah, we'll go with that one.
Okay.
Well, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self for cycling?
I mean, it's so hard to give advice to anyone young these days. Experience can't be taught, really. But I suppose it's like a lot of things. I mean, you see kids making mistakes, and you tell them to apply themselves, be more serious, just concentrate more on what you're doing. But I think if I'd done that, maybe the outcome would have been different. I mean, I had fun along the way in cycling, and that I think is a big thing to consider. It's important that it stays fun, and that you won't continue. You won't last the course if there's not some enjoyment to be had out of it. Perhaps yes, with more application, I could have gone further, but I don't know. I don't know what the outcome might have been with it. What the overall outcome might have been, you know.
Right. I know obviously you can't argue with the results, but the way Sky prepare for races, with it being so clinical, is that, do you think that's quite a cold approach, that the fun element seems to have come out of it a little bit?
Well, a little bit, but I think that's probably just a feature now of professional racing in general. I think all of the riders there are extremely highly prepared. The standard, even amongst the average riders, is much, much higher than it used to be. So that's who knows? Maybe I wouldn't be able to make the same mark nowadays for that reason. You know,
is that Dave Brayle for the door?
Exactly. he's realised we need to get back in touch, you know, and sort that whole process.
Eventually, they're here.
Now, clearly, we said at the top of the piece we're going to be advocating it should be Lord Malcolm Elliott. But apart from obviously incoming sort of trips to the House of Lords and so on, but what sort of things do you do now in terms of what's Malcolm Elliott doing these days, other than obviously doing radio features for On Your Bike?
A variety of things, really. I mean, I work with the Tour of France these days, and also Tour of Yorkshire, and also on the Tour of Britain. I go to various sportive events around the country and do a bit with a few sponsors that I've come in contact with over the years. So it keeps me busy enough. It's nice to be able to be home and spend a bit more time now with my family than I used to be able to.
The next one for yourself, I think, in terms of current stars and such like, Tony.
Yes, is there any, from maybe the British point of view, that we should be aware of, that maybe the next sort of 5 years or so could be a possible
next Malcolm Elliott.
Yes, you know. The next Malcolm Elliott.
I think there's plenty of talent. I was quite impressed by Owen Dool there at the Tour of Britain this year. I saw him getting up there. He's only a young lad, but able to kind of perform in a similar style to how I saw myself all those years ago. But obviously the Yates brothers, I think we're just waiting for them to step up, and I'm sure they're going to be Grand Tour contenders in the next few years. Geraint Thomas, he's another name that I think certainly has the capacity to. He's a 95% of Bradley Wiggins in effect, I think. So it wouldn't be such a huge stretch to. Given if he has the aptitude to make that extra leap, then I think, you know, I think he could certainly emulate Wiggins
as a Welshman winning the Tour de France.
Yeah, one does never see.
Malcolm, we could talk for hours, quite literally, but our podcast is tight in all sorts of ways, and hopefully you'll be returning to us, I would hope, on a semi-regular basis, if we can prevail upon you to do so, because I've just found the last half hour so genuinely magical. We haven't had a chance to speak about the Olympic Games, 1996, 1980, a whole stack of our things and advice, and yes, I know we could have talked about the state of play with respect to pharmaceutical aids for various folk in the advance, but no, we thought we'd keep it positive and work on that basis. But have you enjoyed your connection on your first ever On Your Bike for the listener today?
It's been a pleasure.
Well,
your pleasure.
It's been a genuine joy and absolutely outstanding to see you've linked up with your good self. We will hopefully speak again very soon.
All right.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you fancy a film, we have over 80 great films to choose from, to suit all ages and all film tastes. Why not check out the free film trailers and see if there's anything you fancy? If the latest blockbuster film isn't your thing, then how about one of our classic films, such as The Great Escape, Rain Man, or Some Like It Hot?
250.
250?
Yeah.
You're crazy. You ought to be locked up. You too. 250 guys just walking down the road just like that.
Of course, I'm an excellent driver.
You know how to drive?
Yeah.
Rain Man! You never touch the steering wheel when I'm driving. Do you hear me?
Of course, I don't have my underwear.
To find out more about Bedside Entertainment Services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the Bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial *800.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334 or visit our website at parkvillecarecentre.com. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
OK, you're listening to On Your Bike, the podcast, courtesy of Southside Broadcasting and, of course, Manila PR. I just had a fabulous interview with Malcolm Ellich. You can listen again, of course. You might be listening again already. But then again, you might have thought, no, I just want Malcolm's bits. I'll cut everybody else's out. Tony, wonderful man.
He is a wonderful man. He was. We met him last year before the Tour de France, and he took us around the final stages of, I think, stage two. But they sort of say never meet your heroes because you might as well come away disappointed. And Malcolm lived up to everything that I expected. Sure, he was he's a proper gentleman, down to earth, and a lovely guy.
And that's a cliche, I think, inspirational as well.
He is, the guys who joined him last year on the ride out, it was a fabulous day out, and he gave his time up, and it was a great day out.
So that's it, Volume 6, On Your Bike, wrapped up, done and dusted, and sort of a whole brave new season underway and ticking over. How can people actually get in touch once again with, if they're musicians and they fancy sort of doing various things, I'm sure Manila PR might be sort of some use, and if they're into cycling, they might go that way as well. What's the best way to reach you?
Website, email wise, is tony@manilapr.com for any aspiring bands who want a bit of exposure. Cycling wise, manilacycling.co.uk is the website. Manila Cycling on Twitter and Facebook. Or use the same email, get in touch with me that way.
There you are, you see. Couldn't be simpler. Tony, a pleasure as ever. We'll hopefully be back again without such a break, because, I mean, the last one we actually did was back in February.
Yes, I'll be back next month with some of his fresh young faces for the race team.
There you are, you see. A whole new world is opening up, as we say, that wonderful catchphrase that wraps it all up. Three little words, on your bike. One, two, three, on your bike. You're listening to Southside Broadcasting, and it's time for another award-winning edition of On Your Bike with the one and only Tony McDonagh!